Tonight was a tough night for Roman Reigns. He lost his uncle, Afa, the Wild Samoan. Passed away earlier today at the age of 81. Not even a full 2 months after his brother, Sika, passed away at the end of June. It's eerie, isn't it, how it works sometimes? You hear a lot about older married couples, where when one spouse passes away, many times it's a matter of days or weeks before the other one goes. And I know Afa and Sika were very close. So it's just very eerie how they passed in such close proximity to each other. A couple months ago, the Wild Samoans were here, and now they're not. But Roman posted a very nice statement on his Twitter earlier today. He was scheduled for SmackDown tonight, and there he was in the closing segment to confront Solo Sikoa. It's all about the Ulafala. Everything is based around the necklace. He who wears the Ulafala is the tribal chief. So we had a confrontation, we had a fight between Roman, the OTC as he calls himself, and the would-be tribal chief Solo Sikoa, who came to the ring with only one member of his bloodline. It was just Solo Sikoa and Tama Tonga, but it did not last very long because we had the return tonight for the first time since SummerSlam of Jacob Fatu, walking boot and all. Jacob Fatu in a walking boot is still better than most. And how about this? Jacob Fatu in a walking boot got to beat Roman's ass. Not bad for a first-time confrontation between those two. And it was Roman Reigns tonight, unlike last week, where Roman got to stand tall. It was Roman Reigns lying at the feet of Solo Sikoa and the bloodline, all but Tongaloa. Poor Tongaloa, he was not there tonight. But Roman Reigns was left at their feet as the show went off the air tonight in a hot closing angle. We had a hot tag team championship number one contenders match tonight as well. DIY and the Street Profits fighting for the right to challenge the bloodline. Some variation. I don't know who. It's some combination of Solo Sikoa, Jacob Fatu, Tama Tonga, Tongaloa. They will be defending the tag team titles next week. Tonight, we found out who it will be against, and the Street Profits and DIY went out there. They had what, in my opinion, was the best television match of the week. It's a close call, because there's another match that I really liked, and I was kind of on the fence about which one I liked better. But I would say that it was the best television match of the week. We also had an opening segment. If that was the best television match of the week, the opening segment was the worst segment of the week. But with two hot matches and a hot closing angle, I say that this SmackDown tonight was a thumbs-up show. Has not quite recaptured the magic that SmackDown was rocking there for a while a few months ago. But it was an improvement over a lot of the recent episodes that we've had, so I give this a thumbs-up. This is your SmackDown review. We're going to go through the entire show. It is Friday night, August 16th, 2024. I am the Solid Monster. Thank you for hanging out with me on a Friday night. So I mentioned the awful opening segment. I guess, you know what, it's better. It's like ripping the Band-Aid off, right? You may as well just get it over with. So let's talk about this opening segment here, because it was Tiffany Stratton in the ring to host a championship celebration for the new WWE Women's Champion, Nia Jax, who beat Bayley at SummerSlam to win the title. Nia was carried to the ring on a throne, with her crown upon her head, her being the queen of the ring and all. She got carried to the ring. In the ring, we had Pretty Deadly was in there, by the way. They were in there with Tiffany. The ring had balloons. It had unicorns. Not real unicorns, unicorn balloons. In each of the corners, because unicorns are not real. They had balloons everywhere. Nia was not thrilled. It was very pink. And she was not thrilled about the pink decor. She says she's more of a destruction type of person. She's not really all about the pink. So she said everybody should bow down to her, and that includes Tiffany. And Tiffany didn't want to bow down to her, clearly, because she kept stalling. And instead of her bowing down, she said, well, actually, Pretty Deadly would like to sing a song from their musical. Now, we've been hearing about this Pretty Deadly the musical now for several weeks. And so tonight, we got our first taste of Pretty Deadly the musical. They sang a little number here. This was awful. This was awful. Which I suppose was the point. But even still, even if it was intended to be that way, that doesn't mean that I need to enjoy this segment, which I did not. Thankfully, Meechin ran in with a kendo stick and beat the hell out of everybody, including Naya. Meechin got a nice reaction for the sneak attack. See, there's a reason why this woman has been featured on television the last several weeks. We've seen more of her on SmackDown than we have her entire run on the main roster so far. And it's been mostly little spots here and there, but it served a purpose. The reason that they were trying to reestablish her was because they were setting up for what would be an eventual women's championship match between her and Nia Jax. So she came out here, she cleaned house, and look, Nia needs somebody to beat. She needs that first challenger, and Meechin fits the bill. This was we're pretty deadly in the ring. This was a pretty bad segment. This was not a good opening to SmackDown tonight, but it did not drag on for too long, thankfully. We've had some awful segments and comedy segments like this before, especially under the previous regime, that would go on forever. Like, literally, they were trying to kill time. So they would come up with ways, especially on Mondays, they would come up with ways, how can we prolong the misery as long as possible to get us to, you know, the midway point of the first hour, right? This, I didn't time it, but this didn't go that long. So thankfully, they kept it relatively brief. And I will say something nice about it, other than the fact that the best part about it was when it was over. But I will say something else that was nice about it. It sets up something for Meechin. You know, and it's good to set up things for people in the middle of the card to do. Again, this is one of the things that Triple H has been working at. You see it on Monday nights, and it's clicking. For the most part, it's really firing on all cylinders on Monday nights, trying to find a role for everybody on the show. It's a hard thing to do. Harder on a two-hour show than it would be on a three-hour show. But he has made the attempt, and it may not always work, but he has made the attempt to try to find things for everybody to do. Meechin is one of the beneficiaries of that. 2 years ago, year and a half ago, we never saw this woman. She was like a ghost. So at least she has a role for the time being on this show. Pretty deadly. They're doing the odd couple pairing, it looks like, with them and Tiffany. And I don't know if that's going to be a long-term thing. It could just be that it was one and done this week. I think they might keep them together and do more segments with them. I think there is the potential there. It could be entertaining. This was not. This segment was a miss. Tell you what was not a miss. We followed that up. At least we got to wash the taste of this out of our mouths with this next match, which was the first match of the night. Carmelo Hayes, one-on-one with Andrade. This was Hayes and Andrade Part 3. Andrade came into this up 2-0 on Hayes, so Hayes needed a win here. These two have quietly been putting together a very good series of matches on TV. I say quietly because, yeah, these are not main events. This is not some top-shelf storyline that's going on right now. It's a storyline. It's a perfectly fine, middle-of-the-card wrestling storyline. And these two have gone out there with very little fanfare. You don't hear people, you know, gushing every week about it nonstop, but they have gone out there and strung together a series of really good matches. This one here was no different. In fact, this one here may have been the best so far. Andrade landed a moonsault from the middle rope onto Hayes on the outside. Later on, Andrade went to the top. Hayes, though, pushed him off, and Andrade took a bump out to the floor. Back from the break, two of them were battling on top. Andrade hit a Spanish fly for a good near fall. That Spanish fly spot really got the crowd into it in a major way. Andrade got the audience pumped up, ran right into a super kick, though, from Carmelo. Andrade came back with two suplexes, only to have Hayes counter a third attempt into a cutter. Two of them traded pin attempts, and Hayes hit a knee strike to the head. Andrade, though, came right back with the back elbow for another good near fall. Andrade went to the top rope, and he missed a moonsault. He went for the message. Hayes, though, countered with a roll-up. Got the flash pin to finally notch his first win of the series, a win that he desperately needed to keep this thing going. After the match, Hayes was gloating. Andrade paid him some respect. He went to go leave. Hayes spun him around. Andrade nailed him, and the two of them started brawling. Officials ran out. Agents ran out to separate them. Andrade eventually broke free. The fight continued. The fans were chanting, "Let them fight. Let them fight." People were into this. People were into this big time. They were into the match, and they were into the post-match brawl. Post-match brawl got a great reaction. Really good stuff here from these two. These two have been putting on a clinic every single week. And I, for one, I mean, this program, it's great for a few different reasons. It gives Andrade a chance to shine in a way that he has not since coming back. For Carmelo Hayes, I think it's exactly the kind of program that he needs right now. This right here, it lets him go out there and really showcase what he can do in the ring. And so I think both men are benefiting ultimately from this. And I'm looking forward now to seeing the fourth and probably fifth match between these two. I mean, the first three have been great. So, you know, why not throw a couple more on there? Hayes is still only one win over Andrade. So he's got to try to at least tie things up. And my guess is we end up with at least a best of five, if not maybe a best of seven out of it. So really, really good stuff here from these two. We go backstage where Solo Sikoa is sitting there. Tama Tonga walks in and he presents him with the Ulafala. And Tama says that he would rip Roman Reigns apart later on tonight. But Solo says, look, he being Solo is the tribal chief now. And if Roman takes the Ulafala back, that means that Roman would be the tribal chief, and therefore Tama Tonga would have to acknowledge Roman. And Solo admitted that he too would acknowledge Roman Reigns if that happened, but he's got to take it from him first. So that was interesting. Would he actually acknowledge him, or is he just saying that? They aired a progressive match flow. You know, they have these replays of a match or a segment from the previous week. It was the progressive match flow, but it was another vignette for Giovanni Vinci, who's on his way back. He's been repackaged. I'm not sure how you have a match flow with a vignette for someone, but that's what they did. We had Naomi one-on-one with Blair Davenport. They showed Roxanne Perez, the NXT Women's Champion, in the crowd since they were in Orlando. Poor Roxanne. Can we talk about Roxanne for a minute here? Roxanne Perez has actually had a hell of a run as the NXT Women's Champion. She's had some great matches. She's really come into her own as a heel. And I didn't know that she had it in her. You know, she's very tiny. And she was kind of that, I remember when she first came in, this very timid baby face. But she's had a nice heel run for herself. But on Monday, Julia is wrestling her final match in Japan before she comes to the United States, which means Julia is on her way imminently to NXT. And that is to say nothing of Stephanie Vaquer, who, of course, is also on her way into NXT shortly as well. So enjoy it while it lasts. She is still the champion, but I don't suspect that that will be for that much longer, maybe a couple months. I could see them switching that title on that very first NXT on CW when it debuts at the beginning of October, so she's got some competition coming her way. Unlike Andrade and Carmelo Hayes, I'm sorry to say, Naomi and Blair Davenport, they do not work well together. They just did not gel well. They looked like they were working on different pages of the same book. Something was off. Naomi landed a drop kick in the corner. She went for a split-legged moonsault. Davenport cut her off, countered with a stomp. Davenport then delivered a very Kamigoye-esque, Kota Ibushi-esque, just not with as much force, but it was basically the same type of move, knee strike to the face. And then she pinned Naomi. And that was shocking because I wasn't expecting that to be the finish. I don't think anybody in the crowd was expecting that to be the finish, but she picked up the win. Now, that is Blair Davenport's first win since being called up to SmackDown, first win on the main roster, and it comes over a former women's champion in her hometown. I don't mean Blair's hometown. I'm talking Naomi. Naomi came in here, even in her own hometown, Naomi still cannot pick up a win. This has not been a good time for Naomi. Naomi, it's not like she's racked up any big wins lately anyway. And there have been a few times, and it's not just with Blair, but there have been a few times where she's been in the ring, and I don't know what it is. There's something off lately with Naomi. Because I saw some of her work when she was the Knockouts champion in TNA. And she was having really good matches there. And I just haven't, I don't know, it's like a different Naomi, I feel like, since she's come over these last few months. I don't know. I don't know if it's just that they don't have something solid for her to really sink her teeth into. I don't know if it's just the chemistry issue with some of the people that she's been in the ring with. And, you know, she hasn't been in the ring with them before. So I'm not sure what it is. But yeah, she's kind of lost right now, both in the ring, it feels like sometimes, but also creatively. She's in the creative wilderness right now. Naomi is going to tag, though, with Bianca Belair and Jade Cargill next week against Alba Fire, Isla Dawn, and, of course, Blair Davenport. We had Kevin Owens one-on-one with Grayson Waller. They showed the NXT champion Ethan Page in the crowd before the match began. That was his first time, he did some, you know, jobber duty 15 years ago that I'm unaware of. This was Ethan Page's first appearance on the main roster here in WWE. But again, they were in Orlando, so they had multiple NXT personalities that they showed in the crowd tonight. This here was a match that Austin Theory volunteered his partner for last week, much to the chagrin of Grayson Waller. He was not happy about that. They had a short match. I thought that as a sub 5-minute match, it was about as good as you could ask for. You know, it was a good match. Waller set Owens up for a superplex. Owens, though, fought out of it and landed a swanton bomb for a 2-count. Waller went for his rolling stunner. We see him do this. He goes to the floor. He does that roll into the ring, usually into a stunner, but instead we did get a stunner, but it wasn't from him. It was from Kevin Owens, who stunned him. Did not go for the pin, though. Instead, Owens got up, and he fired up the crowd, and then he finished him off with a pop-up powerbomb. After the match, Owens was not done. He threatened to deliver an apron powerbomb. We've seen him do that before to Waller. Theory saved him. Theory went and grabbed 2 chairs from ringside when Cody Rhodes' music hit and the WWE champion sprinted down to the ring. Rhodes and Owens each grabbed a chair. They hammered Theory and Waller with them. And there was a very, if you paid attention here, there was a very telling camera shot. Cody Rhodes was standing with his back turned to Kevin Owens. He was facing Austin Theory and Grayson Waller in the aisleway. And in the background, you could see him maybe, I don't know, 15 feet away. In the background, Kevin Owens is standing there and he's got the chair in his hand. And just a look that he gave Cody from behind, like he was looking. And I was waiting to see if Cody was going to turn around and Owens was going to hit him with the chair. But instead, he dumped the chair. Before Cody turned around, he dropped the chair. Then Cody turned around. We had a stare down. Cody went over to go grab the WWE title that was on the mat, but Owens beat him to it. He picked the championship up first. And he ended up handing the championship to Cody without incident, and he left. That shot, though, of him holding that chair, seemingly contemplating something and then dropping it, I think was very telling. And so I think we are probably going to get a heel turn. I wasn't sure if we were going to get a full-blown heel turn or not. You know, Randy Orton, of course, his story has yet to play out. We know that's coming. But if it goes down, it could be a situation where Owens has a chair in his hand and he finally uses it on Cody Rhodes, because they did this also last time, if you remember. They both had chairs. So that's the second time now that these two have ended up with chairs in their hands. I think if there's a third time, that third time, Owens is going to use it on Cody. And that would make things a little more interesting if we got that sort of sadistic, vicious, do-whatever-it-takes version of Kevin Owens again, because we know he could be a great heel. And it would make things more interesting if they wanted to do that and go in that direction. But again, I just don't know if they want Owens going full-blown heel, and then Randy Orton comes back and also goes heel. But, as I pointed out last week, they do need some help at the top of the card when it comes to top heels. They are lacking big time in top heels right now. They need at least one big heel at the top of the card. Two would be even better. You could get that in Owens and Orton if they wanted to. They had a vignette for Legado del Fantasma. They were all sitting in a restaurant around the table. Santos Escobar said that Angel and Humberto were demeaned. Week after week after week, they were being demeaned. He told them not to forget who they are. And Escobar said Legado del Fantasma is not just the name, it is a legacy. That's right. Is a legacy of failure. Escobar said next week he will take the United States Championship from LA Knight, and then he toasted to sending that piece of trash back to the trailer park where he came from, with everybody saying, Escobar. So then they cut to the arena live, and they hit LA Knight's entrance music. The place exploded, as they do everywhere they go. The reactions that this man gets, it's no wonder they restructured his contract. They signed him to a longer-term deal. Apparently, he got a nice big fat pay raise. Good for him. He's worked his ass off to get this opportunity. I'm glad to see that he's finally getting it. And I'm glad to see the fans are giving him these types of reactions no matter where they go every single week. They have found themselves a top babyface here. In LA Knight, walked out there with the U.S. title. He mocked the little dinner that he saw Legado was having. Said Escobar is trying to convince everybody that he can just be like him. Knight said that he would put Escobar's churro in the dirt next week with the BFT. He then said that he didn't have time to worry about some cross-eyed half-wit calling him trash, and he'll put him on his ass. And he closed with his catchphrase and said that he would see Escobar in D.C. next week. So we are getting the United States title match on TV next week. They're not doing it in Berlin unless we get some kind of a disputed finish and they run it back again at the end of the month, which I suppose is possible. But right now it looks like it's going to be TV only. I don't know if it'll headline next week. Probably not. Maybe the top of the hour. But they are doing that match on TV next week. Now, they showed Meechin backstage walking out of Nick Aldis's office with a big smile on her face, and she ran into Piper Niven and Chelsea Green. And Chelsea said that they were going to do what Meechin did, but they were having too much fun watching the car crash. That was that opening segment. Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Meechin, or dumpster fire, would be another appropriate way to put it. Meechin said that, well, she got a women's championship match next week against Nia Jax. So, you know, they're really loading up that show in D.C. next week. We have a women's title match next week, and we have a United States Championship match next week. What's so special about next week? That we're getting two title matches on the same show. That's interesting. So when Chelsea found out that Meechin was getting a title match, she was very upset about this, and she and Piper barged into Nick Aldis's office. As soon as they did that, though, Nia Jax attacked Meechin, left her laying on the ground. Aldis comes walking out of his office. He admonishes her, orders her to get into his office. So Nia marches in, and poor Meechin is left laying on the ground. So there it is. And again, they've since made it official that next week it will be Meechin challenging Nia Jax for the women's title. Nia needs a few people to bowl over before she gets to Bailey again, or Charlotte Flair, or whoever it is, the next big name that she's going to feud with, the next big name that will likely take the title from her, she's got to bowl over a couple of people first. That's the role that Meechin is playing here. Nothing wrong with that, but I think we all know how that's going to play out next week. Now, they show Trick Williams. I mentioned the other NXT people they show. They show Trick Williams, former NXT champion, in the front row. For the next match, which pit DIY, Johnny Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa against the Street Profits. This was a number one contenders tag team championship match. The winners would go on to challenge the Bloodline next week in DC for the tag team titles. This right here was one of the best television matches of the week. They had a hell of a match that actually went through two different commercial breaks. I see that I have depressed a lot of people by name-dropping Charlotte. You don't honestly think she's going to be out that much longer, do you? I'm trying to get you prepared, mentally prepared, because you know it's coming. Queen against queen. I said that, I think, even when before she won Queen of the Ring. It just sells itself. Although at the time I said it doesn't have to be for the title necessarily, of course. Silly me. We all know what Charlotte's going for as soon as she gets back. It's only a matter of time, so get ready. And you know what? Those of you who are crying and complaining and moaning, you may not like Charlotte Flair, but the fact is, when she comes back, that is a big name for them to get back in that women's division. So it will only help to get her back, and eventually we can get Charlotte and Tiffany Stratton. Who knows? That could be a WrestleMania match next year. Gargano landed a spear through the ropes on Montez Ford and covered him for a two count. Ciampa tagged in. Ford, though, shoved Gargano into him and then made a tag to Dawkins. Street Profits hit a pounce into a suplex. That was a cool double-team spot. Angelo Dawkins went up top for a swanton bomb, but came up with nothing. Gargano tagged back into the match and went for the one final beat DDT. Dawkins, though, stuffed him and sent him for a ride with an overhead suplex. Montez Ford went for a 450 splash. Ciampa, though, got the knees up. Gargano entered, and they landed a shatter machine. But Dawkins broke up the pin. Street Profits hit their revelation finish and made a cover on Ciampa. Gargano, though, broke it up with a kick at the very last second. This was getting a big reaction here down the stretch from the fans. Fans were into this. Ciampa landed the fairy tale ending on Dawkins, but not before first holding him upside down long enough for Johnny Gargano to deliver a super kick. Then came the fairy tale ending, and that should have been it, but Angelo Dawkins kicked out. That got a big reaction. Gargano went for a spear, got reversed, though, into a neck breaker. Street Profits landed their super blockbuster from the top rope on Gargano to win the match. Right around 15 minutes, this thing went. A great, I would even dare say, takeover-esque in many ways, tag team match. Marred by commercial breaks, which you never used to have a takeover, so it's not quite the same thing, but it was takeover quality. I see a lot of people have been talking about, you know, the black and gold influence on some of these shows with Triple H being at the helm. And you could see it, you could feel it with some of the talent involved. This had that feel to it. It was kind of in that realm, in that territory. And the crowd was hot for it. Two babyface tag teams, but two teams that felt super over here in this match. This could have gone either way. I felt like Angelo Dawkins in that promo at Gorilla last week before they came out. I felt like him pointing out the fact that the Street Profits have not been tag team champions for 3 years was kind of a tell that they probably were going to go on to challenge the Bloodline for the titles. Not a great spot for DIY to be in right now. They were the champions briefly. Didn't have them for very long. Basically transitional champions. They got the belts onto the Bloodline. Now they lost their number one contender spot. What do you do now? It's not like this tag team division on this show is booming. So they may fall into a little bit of a rut now, having come out of this on the losing end. And look, as far as the Street Profits are concerned, I would not count them out as far as potentially winning the tag team titles next week. I'm not expecting it. I'm not predicting that they are going to lose the titles. All I'm saying is, if the Street Profits were to win, I would not be surprised. The only way they would win, though, is if there was some sort of assist that they got and somebody interfered and cost the Bloodline the tag team titles. Maybe a certain Jimmy. I'm just saying. If something like that were to happen, then yes, the Street Profits could end up walking away tag team champions. Barring that, I don't expect the Bloodline to relinquish their grip on those titles anytime soon. Again, what are the best TV matches of the week? It's either this or the Intercontinental title match. 2 out of 3 falls from Raw Monday night with Bron Breakker and Sami Zayn. And honestly, I think I'm going to give the slight edge to this match here. I think I like this a little bit better. I think this was the better quality match. So I'm going to say that this was the best television match of the week. There you go. I know the Olympics are over, but if I was awarding the gold and the bronze, I would give this match the gold and I would give that match the bronze or the silver. I completely skipped over the silver. There was nothing on Dynamite to give the silver to, so I'm going to give the silver to the IC title match. Because if you think I'm giving it to the Young Bucks and the Acclaim from Wednesday, you're out of your mind. So now it was time for Solo Sikoa to make his way down to the ring with Tama Tonga. No Tongaloa. Last we saw Tongaloa, he was speared by Roman Reigns on the show last week. Poor Tongaloa, man. One eye, speared by Roman, everyone's punching bag. I wish him nothing but the best. I'm sure he's at home right now, probably walking into walls and stuff, right? His depth perception is all off kilter, this poor guy. So Solo was in the ring here for a confrontation with Roman. He told Orlando to acknowledge him, which they did not do. He said Roman calls himself the OTC. If he wants this Ulafala back, then bring your ass out here and try to take it from me. Hey, that rhymes. Just realize that rhymes. Roman calls himself the OTC. If you want this back, come out here and try to take it from me. Yeah, look at that. He's a fucking poet. So Roman came out. He got a monster reaction, as you would imagine. He came into the ring. They were staring each other down. Solo slowly removed the Ulafala from around his neck, handed it to Tama Tonga. Solo told Tama to go stand in the corner. And at that point, Roman and Solo, they went at it. They started exchanging blows, trading right hands. Roman took him down with a clothesline, and that was Tama Tonga's cue to attack Roman from behind, which he did. Roman came back, though, planted him with a uranage. Headed outside, he cleared off the announce desk. We'll never know what for, because he got attacked from behind. Solo brought him back into the ring. He set up for the Samoan spike. Roman, though, was able to avoid it. He caught Solo with a Superman punch and then a spear. And then Roman looked over, and in the corner on the mat, he saw the Ulafala. And actually, he saw Tama's tag team title belt sitting on top of the Ulafala. He flicked that shit out of the way. And he picked up the Ulafala, he stared at it, and the place was, you know, getting louder and louder and louder. And then finally, Roman places the necklace around his neck, gets a huge pop. But Jacob Fatu hits the scene. We have not seen Jacob since SummerSlam. Jacob Fatu, out of nowhere, delivers a super kick with a walking boot on. He has the walking boots still on. He kicked this man in the face with it. That, I can honestly sit here and tell you, that's the first time I've ever seen somebody deliver a super kick with a walking boot on. So he kicks Roman in the face, picks him up, posted him shoulder first, and with Roman down in the corner, Fatu then delivered a running hip attack. He sends Roman outside the ring. All three members of the Bloodline, they hoist him up, and they deliver the triple powerbomb to Roman through the announce desk. So we've seen multiple people now laid out by this triple powerbomb, including Paul Heyman. We've seen it to Randy Orton. We've seen it to everybody. Randy Orton, I mentioned, Kevin Owens. So now Roman Reigns falls victim to the triple powerbomb. But they were not done yet. They put Roman back in the ring. Tama Tonga placed the Ulafala back around Solo's neck, and they threw up the ones, standing over Roman Reigns' body at their feet. That is how SmackDown went off the air. Roman Reigns on the receiving end of a beatdown, of a triple team attack. Now, how many times over the last 4 years have we seen Roman Reigns in the position where other people are being beaten down by the Bloodline and being outnumbered and being outmanned? Here, the shoe is on the other foot. And Roman is the one who has nobody. He has no Wise Man. He has no Jimmy. He has no Jay. He has no honorary us. He's all by himself. And Roman Reigns is laid out. It looks like he's going to need some help after all. Didn't look like it last week. He was doing okay on his own. But there was no Jacob Fatu last week. There was Tongaloa, but I mean, fuck the fuck out of here. Are you kidding me? Please. Please. So Roman Reigns is going to need some help, and therein lies the opening for a Jimmy Uso return, and then, of course, eventually Jey Uso, and possibly even Sami Zayn, who is going to be teaming with Jey on Raw this Monday to go for the tag team titles against the Judgment Day. Jey and Sami are still like this. So when we get to that point that Jey Uso is going to join in this battle between the bloodline of old and the bloodline of new, it is entirely possible that Jey Uso will call upon his good friend, the honorary Us, to step in and try to even the odds here against the bloodline. That story has yet to play itself out. Now, Roman Reigns is advertised for the first episode of SmackDown when they return to USA Network on September 13th, so we're about a month out. Not a week too soon to get off of Fox and get back to USA. I am counting down the days. He is not advertised for any other shows right now between now and then. He was advertised for last week's show. He was advertised for tonight. He's not advertised, I don't believe, for Bash in Berlin. It doesn't mean that they can't throw a match on there with him, but right now it doesn't look like he's going to be on that show either. If I had to venture a guess, we may not see Roman back on TV again for another month until that first SmackDown on USA. That's just my feel from the angle they did here at the end of this show. Randy Orton, for example, he took that triple powerbomb and he was gone for a few weeks. Usually people aren't right back the following week, so I don't think we're going to see Roman for at least a few weeks. And what I'm thinking, I'm not thinking Berlin for him. What I'm thinking is I'm looking ahead to that first SmackDown. SmackDown is moving to USA, and WWE is going to want to make a really big deal about that. Not unlike what they did when SmackDown moved to Fox back in 2019. Do you remember what they did for that show? Do you remember the big attraction that they signed? Brock Lesnar had not wrestled a match on television his entire second run since he came back to the company in 2012, and they announced that he would be challenging Kofi Kingston for the WWE Championship on that show. Now, granted, the match went 8 seconds. I know that's still a sore spot for some people, but still, they signed a Brock Lesnar match for that first SmackDown on Fox. WWE is going to want to have a big match on that show. Roman and Solo, I think, is a match that is going to be saved for a PLE like Bad Blood. I don't see them doing that match on TV. Roman and Jacob Fatu is a match that really should be saved for a later date. But Roman Reigns against Jacob Fatu for the first time with some kind of a screwy finish. You know, I wouldn't have Roman just beat Jacob, but you could do the match. You could do the match and have the bloodline interfere. Give us a taste of what we'll get in the future between those two. You could do Roman against Tama Tonga, one-on-one. I wouldn't bother with Roman against Tongaloa. I mean, that's just a waste of time. So you could do either of those matches, or maybe they do some kind of a tag team match. Maybe we get Roman Reigns and Jimmy Uso on the same side, taking on two members of the bloodline. It could be Solo and Jacob. It could be Solo and Tama. Right? Whatever combination of bloodline members that it would be. But maybe we get a tag team match on that show. Solo and Tama Tonga are the two men who put Jimmy down in the first place when they did that injury angle to write him off of TV. So I think in the absence of Roman in these next few weeks, we may finally get the return of Jimmy Uso, then Roman, and maybe they end up on the same side. Because even Roman Reigns in a tag team match would still be a big draw for that first episode of SmackDown. So that's what I'm thinking. If I'm WWE, I definitely want to have Roman. Why did it come out that way? I'm telling you, man, I'm in pain. I definitely would want to have Roman on that show. Even if it's in a tag team match, I am going to find a way to get Roman Reigns on that first SmackDown on USA. That's what I think they're going to do. So that was SmackDown tonight. As I said at the beginning of all this, a thumbs up show. I enjoyed it. We had two really hot matches. We had a hot closing angle. The rest of it was there. The opening segment was offensive to me, but again, it was relatively brief, so it is what it is. But let's take a look at the Twitter poll, see what you guys thought of SmackDown from Orlando tonight. 73% thumbs up rating for tonight's show, 17.3% thumbs in the middle, and under 10%, 9.7% thumbs down. So pretty good score for SmackDown tonight at Solomonster on Twitter is where you can go to vote. Like I said, I safely go with a thumbs up for the show tonight. Better show than last week, says Mr. Dynamite. I agree. We've had some bad SmackDowns over the past month and a half or so. It feels like ever since Jacob Fatu hit the scene, not because of Jacob. Jacob's been one of the saving graces of this show when he's there. But ever since then, SmackDown just has not been at its best, let's say. Tonight, though, was, I thought, a good effort. All right, let's go first to our boy, Fire Panda. Fire Panda. Drop not one, but two super chats. And I shall read them to you now. Even though you don't see them on screen, but they came in earlier before I went live. Oh, Solo. I think I'm cute. I know I'm sexy. I've got the looks that drives the girls wild. I've got the moves that really move them. I send chills up and down their spine. I'm just a sexy boy. I'm not your boy toy. Eat your heart out, girls. Hands off the merchandise. I know those lyrics quite well, actually. I can recite those lyrics without even looking at them, because I've been listening to that song for 30 years of my life. Both the original version and the version as sung by Shawn Michaels. Hey, Fire Panda, thank you for the Super Chat support. I do appreciate it very much. Let's see here. Brother Fluff Salisbury with five. I'm at SmackDown with my son tonight. We are celebrating our birthday. His last live show was WrestleMania 33. I was at that show in Orlando. Yes, I was there too. Should have said hello. You mean to tell me you couldn't find me in a big-ass stadium like that? Well, I hope you enjoyed the show, Fluff, and happy birthday to you and your son. I hope it was a good one. Donnie Yasu. So, this Bash in Berlin pay-per-view theme by Baby Metal and Electric Callboy is absolutely amazing. I hope this is the start of good pay-per-view themes returning. I am all for the metal themes returning. I like it. When I saw that announcement and I listened to the song, I said, this is a pretty bitchin' song. For those of you who have not heard it, you can bring it up on Spotify or whatever. It's, as he said, by Baby Metal. I think Baby Metal is the Japanese girl band. And then Electric Callboy. It's like two very different, I don't want to say styles, but just two very different groups. And they've come together here for this song. It's called Ratatata. And it's really good. A really good theme. Now, he said it's a theme for Bash in Berlin, Triple H said. He didn't say it was the theme, so there may be more than one. But yeah, I'm loving it, man. I'm loving it. Takes me back to the 2001, 2002, 2003 era. The Ruthless Aggression era. We got a lot of really cool music during that time, too.
Yeet.
That's right. Remember Puddle of Mud and Trust Company. God, well, I'm trying to think of some of the other ones, too. The Shawn-a-thon. If not at the next PLE, when do you think Roman against Solo one-on-one happens? Because Bad Blood should headline with Punk and Drew, and then you have War Games. I would think Bad Blood. That's what I would think. Roman and Solo does not have to headline the show. So you could do it at Bad Blood. That's fine. Mikey S13, how awful would a Def Rebel Stone Cold theme be? Well, you said the minute you said Def Rebel, I think you answered your own question. It would be pretty fucking terrible. So let's not even put that into the atmosphere. Josh Carlos 98 with a 999. Braun, Jacob, and Bronson Reed. Three new guys in WWE establishing their star power. Great to see new faces getting a chance to shine. A far cry from the deviant a-hole. I hope Reed beats Seth in match one. He should. When Seth Rollins and Bronson Reed have their first match, I agree. I think that Bronson Reed should win that first match. Evanescence, of course. How could I forget? Evanescence was great. Yeah, no, Evanescence was great. Sick Puppies. God, Seven Dust. Yeah, there were some good ones. That's Trapped by Headstrong. Yeah, you know what? That one was one of my favorites, actually. But yeah, there's a song called Downfall by Trust Company that they use for... Gosh, I want to say it was one of the Unforgiven shows. Maybe Unforgiven 01? That one is a favorite of mine, too. Jerome Eugenio. What's going on, Jerome? Sent in a $5 super chat here. Every week, Roman Reigns just beats up Solo Sikoa. Is this still going to be a PLE match? Of course, they have to fight over the Ulafala. Did you not see the end of the show tonight when he was standing over Roman's dead body? So, yes, of course. We are going to get a match between them at some point. That's the whole point. Josh Carlos, better Backlash main event. Triple H versus John Cena versus Edge in 2006 or Cena versus HBK versus Edge versus Orton in 2007. I'm going to be honest with you. I have no memory of either one of those matches. So obviously, those matches did not make a huge impression on me. So I can't say. I really can't give you my input because I don't remember why. I know I watched them, but I don't remember watching those matches. So I don't know. John Sterniker. I heard this idea. Owens and Orton should turn heel together on Cody and become a group called New Legacy. What do you think? Yeah, I don't like the New Legacy thing, but Orton and Owens turning together on Cody? Yeah, that could work. I think that could work. David Thering with the 12. Again, thank you for your kind thoughts. I hope you are doing well, sir. Chris AXC. Celebrating my 41st with Solo tonight. Well, happy birthday, Chris. Does Jacob Fatu take the Ulafala at some point? And how do they introduce Hikuleo to the story? Hashtag, where is AJ Styles? AJ should be back on TV any week now. He was supposed to be there last week. He wasn't. He wasn't there this week either. Jacob taking the Ulafala, I could see, but that's not until a little further down the road. Maybe sometime next year I could see that. But it's not going to be anything we see in the next 6 months. As far as Hikuleo, I have no idea. I really don't know where he fits in all this. I really don't. I would think that he would be with his brothers. So he would be, I guess, with the new bloodline. And, you know, maybe... You know, one idea that I had floated a while back is that... And this was when I was thinking that maybe there was a chance that Jacob would end up turning on Solo. And Solo would have to go crawling back to Roman and Jimmy and Jay. And then on the opposing side, you would have Tama Tonga, Tongaloa, Jacob Fatu, and then maybe throw Hikuleo in there. And that could work, but Jacob is obviously fiercely loyal to Solo Sikoa. If he comes back in a walking boot to attack Roman Reigns and save him. So, I don't know that there is a spot right now for Hikuleo. I think that, you know, the more we talk about this, I just think it's getting to the point where you might take it one step too far and have one too many people involved here. I just don't know where else you would drop him in the story where he fits. I don't know. Hisco 95, in a recent interview, Stone Cold confirmed that he was very close to appearing at WrestleMania 40, but he and his wife were going through something and couldn't go to Philly. It still sucks we didn't get that Rock and Austin stare down. Yes, I saw the same interview. There was something that came up that weekend, and he was obligated to be there. So he was not, even though they had discussions about it. I had called that shit, I think even before, people were going nuts about Austin. Oh, he's on the truck. He's on the truck art in the background. It's a sign. Even before that, you guys know, if you listen to the podcast week to week, I mapped this whole thing out in my brain, and I said, man, it builds and builds and builds until Austin comes out, and you get that moment with Austin and Rock in Philadelphia 25 years after their WrestleMania 15 match in that same city. It would have been so perfect. The glass shatter. I'm still pissed it didn't happen, but it is what it is. But one thing he did say in that interview, he confirmed he is going to be, or hopes to be, part of WrestleMania 41. He says they're going to be in Vegas, 400 miles away from where he lives, basically. He's going to be there. We don't know doing what. He said if he has to help out Cody again, he'd be more than happy to help out Cody if Cody is in a tough spot. He didn't say he's going to have a match. But it sounds like Austin is all but confirmed for WrestleMania next year. The Juliet Bobby Lashley moved to the WWE alumni section. I did see that. I think he and MVP both have been moved to the alumni section, but we already knew that they were gone, so that's not really a surprise. MLK, thank you for the five. Is it safe to say that Cody and Roman are the Rock and Stone Cold of today's generation in terms of business and popularity? Again, I hate making those comparisons. Austin and Rock, it was a moment in time, man. I can't really adequately convey just how special it was to have them both on top at the same time and how lucky Vince McMahon and that company was to have two stars of that caliber as over as they were at the same time. If you were looking for the equivalent in terms of two over popular baby faces, then yes, it would be Roman and Cody. Roman and Cody are those two guys now. But again, I don't want people to hear that and think I'm saying that it's modern day Austin and Rock. There will never be a modern day. I'm going to shut that shit down right now. There will never be a modern-day Austin and Rock together at the same time. It's not going to happen. But they would be the closest thing. KC1324, when do you think we see Jimmy and Paul Heyman make their return? Always love listening to the Sound Off podcast on Mondays during my workouts. Thank you, KC. Keep on listening. I think we get Jimmy in the next few weeks. I think in the absence of Roman is when we'll see Jimmy. Heyman, I don't know, but Jimmy, I would expect him back imminently. Unregistered Hypercam. With how long Gunther and Roman's title reigns have been, do you think Triple H will give Flair a couple of long reigns instead of two or three short reigns a year? Charlotte Flair, I don't, because they are trying to pad her resume to get her to 16. So you're going to see Charlotte win the belt, and I guarantee you the next time she wins the belt, she's not going to have it for that long. The quicker they get it off her, the quicker she could win it again, because I think she's at 14 now, right? So one more would be 15, and then one more after that would tie her father's phony record of 16, even though he really has 21. And when all is said and done, she'll be probably 18, 19, 20-time champion. It's pretty much inevitable. Dev to Dust, every match at All In should be 60 minutes. Yeah, let's not do that. The Juliet, Toni Storm versus Saraya for the AEW Women's title on Dynamite on Wednesday. Just announced on Rampage. And the crowd goes mild. No, Dynamite on Wednesday is in Cardiff. They're in Cardiff, Wales. So I guess they figured that match is going to get a great reaction from the crowd in Cardiff. I myself am looking forward to Okada and Claudio. That's me. Lars, WWE announced a house show in Orlando the same night as World's End in Orlando, about 20 minutes down the street. Did they? Oh, man. What a bunch of petty pricks. What a bunch of petty pricks. That's hilarious. Well, I'm sure that's just a coincidence. I'm sure that they had no idea that AEW was running a show in the same city on the same night. JR with the $12. Who would be your YouTuber Bloodline War Games team? You get to choose from wrestling podcasters, YouTubers, and who... Oh, I don't know. Who would I want to go against? I don't know. Who's the most punchable on YouTube? I'm going beyond wrestling here. There was a guy, God, I don't know how he ended up, the algorithm somehow, he ended up on my, in my recommendeds. And he has like multi-millions of followers, and I'd never heard of him before. And I don't remember his name, but I just thought to myself, man, this guy has such a punchable face. And I just can't remember who he is. No, it's not Mr. Beast. It's not Mr. Beast. Although, wasn't there some kind of controversy with... I can't keep up with all these YouTuber controversies. Dr. Disrespect, and there was another one. Apparently, they're all coming out, interacting with underage girls. Well, what is with these people? And then there was some controversy with Mr. Beast. I don't have the full story on that. Something was going on with him. I don't know what's going on, man. Gotta lead a clean life here on YouTube, like me. No controversy. Aiden Ross? I don't know who that is. But yeah, I mean, as far as a team, I don't know. I work alone. I am here doing this by myself. Like Roman coming out last week on TV and manhandling all the members of the Bloodline all by himself. That's me. I put them all down one by one. I don't need nobody's help. Kel Mickens. Tomorrow is my birthday, but we got a lot of birthdays here, huh? What is this? This is August, right? Boy, a lot of parents getting down here. For the holidays, I guess, in December. And then out popped Kel. Please listen to Days Go by Dirty Vegas this weekend for me. Hashtag throwback. I probably will not, but Kel, I want to wish you a very happy birthday, brother. And Nightmare Knee with the $20 super chat. Which song did they use for Rock versus Stone Cold WrestleMania 17? Was that when they used My Way? Yes, indeed. They used My Way by Limp Bizkit. And I know that for WrestleMania 19, they used Crack Addict by Limp Bizkit. They were in their Limp Bizkit Kid Rock phase back then. They loved Limp Bizkit. So we heard a lot of them. Who else did they use? Saliva. They used Saliva a lot back then. Hello, VP coming in hot with a $5 super chat. Obafemi is him. Obafemi's got a lot of potential to be very big on the main roster. I don't know if I would say that he's him, but he's got a lot of potential for sure. The Juliet, greatest heel of all time. Of all time? I don't know. I'll throw it to you guys. Who do you think? It's a lot to choose from there. Who do you think is the greatest heel of all time? Throw out some names, and I will tell you if I agree or disagree. So I got some names bouncing around in my head, but... I'm not sure. Rick Rude says the Winston Slim. No, not Rick Rude. Vince, Yeah, I mean, honestly, that was the name I had in my head, Mr. McMahon. Yep, I'm getting a lot of Vinces here. I got a Ric Flair from one person, Edge. Nah, not Edge. Edge was a good heel though for a while there. He was a really good heel. But I gotta go, Mr. McMahon. There's never been, and boy, did that turn out to be. I don't know, art imitating life or life imitating art, but seemed to come very easy for him to be healed. I guess we know why. He was always a heel in real life. So yeah, my answer would be Mr. McMahon, the Mr. McMahon character. The Juliet. Worst act that a heel has ever done. You know, I just talked about him last week. It's kind of hard to sit here and say that anybody has done worse than what the Big Boss Man did to Big Show and to Al Snow. Do I have to remind you again that this man cooked Al Snow's dog and fed it to him, unbeknownst to him, and interrupted the Big Show's father's funeral and dragged the casket behind him by a chain? Find me someone who did worse. That's pretty fucking bad. Pepper steak. That's right. He fed him pepper steak. Sean D. Hogan brother. I don't know what that means. Are you throwing his name in the hat for the best heel? Hogan would be on the list too. Hogan would be on the list too. Certainly, you will not find anybody in the wrestling business who was as influential as a babyface and then as a heel, especially business-wise, as Hogan. Whatever you think of him, you cannot deny that. Nobody else has done that. Cameron Spencer. I'm a first responder, and yesterday on duty, I encountered three men playing dominoes in the lane on the freeway. They were arrested. What are your thoughts? I would say if you're going to play dominoes, don't play it on the freeway. That sounds to me like a suicide attempt, is what that sounds like. I'm glad you saved them. Well, we are now sitting at 400 plus likes. So, little golf clap there. Thank you, guys. Let's go ahead and be the booker.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to be the booker.
And we should be sitting pretty at 500 by now, but I'll take the 400. Let's be the booker here. Bald Head Randy was a menace, giving wrestlers CTE with those punts. Yes, he was. But not the greatest heel of all time. And this right here is not the greatest tag team of all time. We have. Now, I'm trying to think if they had a name, because it wasn't. We had LOD 2000. That was Hawk and Animal back in 98. Did they have a special name for these two? It's Road Warrior Animal and Road Warrior Heidenreich. I don't remember if they had a certain special LOD name for them or not. But God, I've completely forgotten they were the tag team champions. I think my mind just tries to block out certain things. I have no recollection of when they won the titles and who they beat them for, who they lost them to. It was just LOD. Is that what they? Okay. I guess they just called them LOD. Well, LOD. We'll call them Wish LOD. Going to be stepping into the ring with Art. No. Oh, we had a little false finish there. With Cody Rhodes. I don't know what that was. With Cody Rhodes and Goldust. Let's be honest here. We were done the minute we landed on Heidenreich and Animal. we had a little false finish there. I mean, I thought we landed on Miz and R-Truth, and then it just kept going. It froze there for a few seconds, and then it just kept on going. Well, that was going to be a buzzer no matter what, so in the end, it doesn't really matter. Women's Be the Booker. The new LOD, says Char-Char. The new LOD. Remember when Hawk and Animal split up in the early 90s? They went their separate ways, and Hawk went to Japan. And Kendo Sasaki, or whoever it was that was his tag team partner, Power Warrior, I think. That was like another version of LOD. All right, Women's Be the Booker. We begin with, well, look at that. Say her name and she appears. Who mentioned Saraya before? Saraya, gracing us with her presence here in Be the Booker. Well, we beat Tony Khan to the punch. You don't have to wait until Wednesday. We're getting a Saraya match here tonight. And Saraya is going... Oh, we should land on Tony Storm. How great would that be? Saraya will be taking on Mercedes Moné. Now, there is history here between these two. As I am sure you are aware. So how are we feeling about this match? Mercedes and Saraya. Because there's a story there. This is a match that has story to it. I am going to go with the bell. I'm going to go with the bell for that. And I do think at some point we will get that match in AEW. I feel like it has to happen at some point. Look at that. A match with story. We don't land on those too often here in Be the Booker. It's usually just a bunch of randos. All right. Men's Be the Booker. Kick things off here with triple threat. We land on a stipulation, and therefore we are going to have to choose not one, not two, but three men for our main event tonight. This is exciting. Always love when we land on a stip. All right, triple threat time. How could this be anything but a bell, right? Say his name and he appears. Look who it is, everybody. It is Joe Hendry. This man is everywhere. He's on TNA television. He's on NXT television. He's coming to House of Glory next month for the first time. And now he makes his Be the Booker debut. Joe Hendry is participant number one in our Triple Threat main event. Participant number two. Have you seen this man? If so, please call your local police department and let them know of his whereabouts because we can't find him. It is Wardlow. If Tony Khan won't book him, then I will. We have Joe Hendry and we have Wardlow. We need one more. We need one more to complete our triple threat. And the triple threat match will include Big Sexy, Kevin Nash, Wardlow, Kevin Nash, and Joe Hendry. Who do you think is not doing the job in this match? This guy right here in the Wolfpack shirt. Well, you know, prime Kevin Nash and Wardlow would have been an interesting big man match. Joe Hendry thrown in. I mean, Joe Hendry is just kind of the odd man out here. But I think we all know who's going over here. It's the guy with the pen who's booking the match. Because Kevin Nash, you know, he comes with some booking power here and Be the Booker. It was worked into his contract. In order to sign him, I had no choice. I had to surrender some booking power. So I think we all know how that's going to go. 2 out of 3. Not bad. Not bad. Joe Hendry is eating the pin. Damn right he is. You're damn right. We know exactly who's eating the pin in that match. We have got some final messages here. By the way, shout out to Justin, who has been a channel member for 14 months. Hogan's best heel run, 83 to 96. I see what you did there. Well done. Well done. As I have always said, Hogan was just a heel masquerading as a babyface. We just didn't know it. Anyway, thank you guys for all the love tonight here on the SmackDown stream. I will be live with you again after Raw on Monday night. That'll be the Monday Night Raw recap. Before that, we have episode 875 of The Sound Off coming up on Sunday. House of Glory is actually running its first show. It's a joint show with the local promotion over there in Las Vegas tomorrow. I'll be here. But if you are in Vegas, if you're going to be in the area over there, go to hogwrestling.net. There's more information there. Check it out. It's one of our many road shows this year. We were in Philadelphia WrestleMania week. We had a show in Boston back in May. And we are going to be in Chicago on September 5th. And I will be there as well. So a lot of fun stuff coming up. But definitely check out episode 875. And also check out the other reviews this week if you missed it. Monday Night Raw. It's a great show on Monday. We had the Dynamite recap on Wednesday. So I got you covered with all that stuff. Did I see Nick Grosso's super chat? I believe I did. Let's see. It literally just popped up on my sidebar. Thank you. To me, Jake Roberts, says Nick. Thank you, Nick. Thank you to everybody who pointed that out, too. Just popped up. Thank you for the $20. To me, Jake Roberts, he says, from 91 to 92, will be one of the most dastardly heels ever. He slapped Miss Elizabeth. Also, I heard after that angle, her parents were so upset and her father threatened to kill Randy Savage. Is that true? I don't remember hearing about that. The only reason I wouldn't put Jake at number one, and I would love to, is because it was just, it was still a relatively short run. Heel Jake from late 91 into 92 is one of my all-time favorite heels. I still put McMahon, though, at the top. Jake would be pretty high up on the list for me, though. I just wish that run was longer. But he was so good. He was so good in that role. And yeah, I mean, think about all the things that happened in such a short period of time with the snake bite, smacking Elizabeth. It was heel Jake that led to babyface Undertaker a few months later. And then Undertaker was a babyface for years and years and years after that. But Jake is one of the greats for a reason. You know, you may not think of him in the ring as one of the greats because there was nothing flashy about him. But his psychology and his promos and his presence and just his ability to just draw you in without being over the top and shouting and everything that, you know, your typical heel would do, that's what separated him from everybody else. There was something unnerving about that guy. So, yeah, Jake was great. And that feud with Randy Savage at the end of 91 is one of my all-time favorites. And also, by the way, you know, it's rare that you get somebody playing heel and babyface where both of their heel and babyface themes are both badass. He had a great babyface theme, but his heel theme was even better. Like his heel Jake Roberts music from the early 90s was fucking great. You know why? Because Def Rebel didn't put it together. You know damn well that if Def Rebel were responsible for Jake the Snake Roberts theme, you know how it would start with like a hiss. No, you know what it would start with? DDT. And then it would go into some crappy fucking generic instrumental theme. DDT. Role model. Fucking Def Rebel. If I had a little genie lamp in front of me right now, my first wish would be to banish Def Rebel from doing any more theme music in WWE. Oh, man. Enough about Def Rebel. I don't want to think about them for the rest of the weekend. Be well, stay safe, And come on back Monday night for the Raw post show. Have a great weekend, guys. I'll see you on Monday.